I knew games. I loved games. This was like, right. I don't know, just something I could never shake. Mm-hmm. And so.
Welcome to Game Dev Advice, the Game Developers Podcast, your place for resources and in-depth conversations with other game development professionals. I'm your host, John J.P. Podlasic. I've worked at 10 different game companies, starting back in 1989 with the TurboGrafx-16. Over the decades, I've developed games like Mortal Kombat, Avengers Initiative, Beavis and Butthead, and numerous others. I now work for a startup called Level X. But this podcast isn't about me. It's about you and the game development community. So if you have questions or ideas, give a call, 224-484-7733, or go to the gamedevadvice.com website. So let's kick things off with the new Game Dev Advice.
This episode is a bit different from the normal format, but I think it's important to talk more about these topics, plus share how to get help. My guest is Jay Lin, the hotline director of the Games and Online Harassment Hotline and a mental health advocate for video game spaces. They have a background in queer community health and suicide prevention with roots in collegiate esports. Jay is also a community organizer around trans liberation, queer arts, and racial justice based in Austin, Texas. Hope you enjoy this. Hey, Jay. So where are you calling in from tonight?
I am here in Austin, Texas.
Beautiful part of the country and a growing area too. That's nice.
Yeah, I really love it here. I've been here for about 10 years.
That's OG for Austin. Right? So can you tell me about your current role in the projects you're working on?
Yeah, so I am the programs manager for Feminist Frequency, and we run the Games and Online Harassment Hotline. So I am the hotline director there, but also manage our other programs, including a new project we just launched called the Culture Shift Project. So it's, yeah, a lot of stuff coming up, growing and moving along. It's really excited. It's really exciting. Yeah.
No, that's great to hear. So can you share about your work at the Game Hotline and the ways you're supporting game developers right now? Because that's I think I initially learned about you was through GameIndustry.biz article or something like that. Mm-hmm. But
that article that you're mentioning, that was around the 1 year kind of anniversary of the Games Hotline. So the Games Hotline launched in August of 2020. It launched just as a free, confidential, emotional support resource for anyone who makes or plays games. So it's all text message based. We support folks in real time. And it really came out of a gap and a need that we saw in the games industry, as well as larger gaming spaces, for a place that folks could go when they were dealing with mental health issues or struggles, dealing with, you know, experiences of like toxicity or abuse in the industry or while gaming online or just while being online. And especially as, you know, the Me Too waves kind of keep coming over and over again in the games industry, we were seeing that was really bringing out a lot of reactions and feelings and old scars for folks. And we really wanted a place where folks could just come and be believed and be listened to and tell their story without kind of fear of retaliation or worries about kind of public perception, just to have somewhere where to talk about it. So yeah, out of all of that, we launched the Games and Online Harassment Hotline. And since then, we really have been able to reach folks from all across the industry, as well as in a whole bunch of different gaming spaces and content creation spaces. So it's been really cool.
That's great. So like it happens in kind of walk me through it. So like someone has been playing a game and there was something that happened or something, you know, they can just start reach out via text and then somebody on the team replies back and kind of has a dialogue. Is that kind of how it works?
Yeah. So to get connected to the games hotline, you just text support to 23368 from anywhere in the US. And you can text in at any time. Our agents are online every day from 3 to 7 p.m. Pacific time. And so that's when we'll get back to you. But even if it's in the middle of the night, you can text us and we'll respond when we're on the next day. And so, yeah, a lot of folks will text us like from something that just happened and that, you know, they're having a reaction to or wanting to talk to someone about.
Right.
Folks also text us about, you know, non kind of crisis moment things, like things that are just kind of ongoing of, you know, maybe it's not something that specific that happened in a game, but maybe it's about the people that they're playing with, you know, maybe those folks are bullying them or being hostile or I don't know, just having a conflict. Similarly at work, you know, maybe it is that something happened at work that day and you want to talk to someone about it, or it's, you know, what's more common is just the ongoing struggle of like, it's been rough for a while and I don't know if I can keep doing this. Yeah. Or, you know, maybe something a little bit more escalated happened today, but it's actually not even, it's not that that's that bad. What's bad is that this whole like landscape has been happening to me for all of this time. And so that's, I think something that's really special about, the games hotline is that we're like made by people who have been in the game space and have been directly impacted by harassment and abuse in game spaces. And so, you know, like we can speak games, we get it. You won't have to explain anything, you know, about the culture to us. Yeah. And that means we can really just focus on you and what's going on.
No, that's great. So do people volunteer to be part of the hotline? You know, I'm just trying to visualize like how that works for people.
Yeah. So our volunteer agents are all trained through a more standard kind of suicide prevention, mental health, kind of crisis intervention and de-escalation training. And so they start with those core skills. And then we add on additional training around games culture and online harassment and how to deal with like digital security stuff, as well as like having harder conversations around accountability and how to talk to folks who are experiencing harassment, but maybe as a result of, as a consequence for harm that they've also caused. We get actually a number of text messages from folks like that. And we want to be able to offer support to them while not necessarily endorsing the things that they've done or minimizing any harm that they've caused. And so we also do some extra training on that that doesn't necessarily show up as much on like suicide hotlines traditionally.
That's powerful stuff. Can you tell me about this initiative you'd mentioned, the Culture Shift Project, and how you're approaching game studios?
Yeah, so it's really exciting, right? We launched the Games Hotline in 2020. That felt really like, you know, we want games folks to have, you know, an immediate live place to go just as an individual, right? Like as it's about people, it's these one-on-one interactions. And we want folks to just have this like resource to access and go to deal with like whatever is going on for them right now. But on the other end, we also know that, you know, the issues of, you know, crunch, abuse, harassment, toxicity in the industry, they aren't just individual issues. It's also a cultural and systemic issue that has been perpetuated and ongoing for a really long time. So this project is kind of addresses the other end, right? Like if the games hotline is about, you know, people and individuals, the Culture Shift Project is about the systems and structures that we're all living in. This is a new program that we're launching in partnership with Take This, who you might know as also just a really wonderful mental health organization that has done work in games for a really long time. And it's a really comprehensive program that goes into game studios, you know, works with top leadership to bring a really like full program to the whole company. And really to look at not, you know, not, this isn't your usual like one and done harassment training video.
Yeah, right.
This is really a ground up. Let's really look at this. Let's really talk about it. Let's really look at what's going on here, mm-hmm. And how we can, you know, prevent and address harm that has happened, prevent harm that may happen in the future, and stop, you know, even the smaller level harms that may be going on right now. Yeah. It's really exciting. It's a really big project, and it's been really wonderful that there's been a lot of interest and buy-in from folks mm-hmm. in the industry. But it definitely is a moment where folks are feeling like this is needed, and we want to be part of the change in the industry.
Okay. So game studios kind of opt into being part of this? Is that kind of how it works, or?
Yeah. So game studios would bring this project on into their company, and we would uh-huh. work with them to kind of tailor a custom curriculum, depending on like the size of their studio or the issues that they may already know about and mm-hmm. stuff like that.
And you kind of touched on this earlier, but like, why do you think gender-based harm happens and just keeps happening in the game industry? Like, why does this keep happening? Because I ask myself that too.
Right. Yeah. That's a really big question. And it's definitely what we really want to answer and look at with mm-hmm. the Culture Shift Project. Because ultimately it's not about bad apples, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of the kind of current responses, and we can get into that, but a lot of the current right. responses that we have around, you know, what we do when someone's been accused of causing harm or sexual violence, mm-hmm. we've seen this happen again and again, but it doesn't seem to end when we fire them or when we, you know, kick them out of a certain group.
Right.
Because the reality is that it's really not about bad apples. It's not about individual behavior. Although mm-hmm. individuals are responsible for their own actions,
yeah.
the larger problem is that the games industry has this deeply rooted culture that models for us, you know, what is okay in the ways that we treat each other and certain people, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Especially folks who are more marginalized and more vulnerable to gender-based harm. Mm-hmm. We very much still have just like a really huge power dynamics, and really, we see really strong lines around gender of who belongs in the games industry, who gets power in the games industry, and mm. who is disposable, right? And so it is really just this like large cultural issue that has, yeah, just really deeply rooted norms. And so when we are continuously modeling the same kind of violence to each other and rewarding it, it just, of course, it perpetuates, right?
Yeah, you're right. And it's not just like, everything's perfect and there's one bad apple and you pluck the bad apple
right.
and everything goes to how it should be. There's deeper underlying seated issues. So mm-hmm.
the other thing is I really look at this, the problem of gender-based harm and sexual violence, as kind of like an iceberg shaped problem. Mm-hmm. Right. And I think, you know, the things that get headlines, right, are like the Activision Blizzard stuff of like pretty like escalated sexual violence, right? Like really kind of more extreme cases mm-hmm. of like abuse or but the reality is that it's not like we have this like really healthy culture otherwise, and then all of the sudden an extreme case of sexual violence happens, right? Mm-hmm. It's actually this like much larger issue below the surface, right? You have all of these like smaller types of gender-based harm under the surface, right? Of like objectification and, you know, sexist jokes and, mm-hmm. you know, biased hiring retention policies, biased like HR policies that are more about protecting the company than about, you know, helping survivors heal when something happens. Mm-hmm. And all of these like littler things, those aren't the things that get the visibility in the spotlight, but mm-hmm. those are the things that uphold, that those are the things that enable the escalated things to happen.
Right. What do you think accountability should look like in this space and all the things going on?
Yeah. I mean, with all the stuff that we've been talking about already, you know, a lot of our current responses, we've talked about how it doesn't really work when we just pluck that bad apple out, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when I think about what's really not working about how we currently deal with gender-based harm, I see that it's so much punishment and it's so much shame.
Yeah.
You know, so you either fire them from the company, or, you know, someone who's, you know, caused harm or been abusive, you either fire them from the company, or if the company won't do anything, you go online, you go on social media and really like publicly shame them until, you know, some consequence happens.
Right.
And it's not that necessarily those things in isolation are bad moves, you know, like if someone is really causing a lot of harm actively, they probably do need to be removed from that position.
And especially if nothing's being done, right? Like,
right, exactly.
Swept under the rug. Yeah.
Yeah. And of course, like when, especially survivors who feel like they've been silenced and unheard for so long, right? Maybe you've reported something and nothing happened, or maybe you tried to tell someone or warn someone, but nothing happened. And then if finally you're just fed up, right? And you're outraged. And of course, like you go online and write a huge tirade and call out. And that's such an understandable reaction. And so it's not to say that either of these things are bad in themselves, but what we do know is that they aren't changing behavior, right? So to me, accountability is about really acknowledging what happened and acknowledging that it was not okay. It is about apologizing and trying to make things as right as you can. And it's about like figuring out how you can stop the pattern of behavior or not do that again. Because also these behaviors usually don't come out of nowhere. It's usually, you know, part of a pattern or the way that you are coping with something else that you're dealing with. But it's coming out in this really harmful way. And each one of those pieces, I don't see happening in a lot of the kind of mainstream ways that we see like gender-based harm dealt with now, right? There's no acknowledgement. We pretend like it doesn't happen. Or we get really defensive and just like, you know, that's not us. We don't do that.
Or half-ass apology with caveats.
Exactly. No apology. And then, and then no change in behavior, right? There's nothing has changed to stop this from happening again.
Right. Groundhog Day. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Kind of talking more about the culture shift program, you know, how is that going? Like, when did it launch? Can you share about the number of studios working with you? You know, some kind of more metrics and numbers around that. I'm just kind of curious.
Yeah. Well, we're actually just launching this month, which is really exciting. Yeah. So
let me just preface this. This is February 23rd. So you might be hearing this later, but yeah. Okay. So you're just launching in February. Great.
We're actually starting with our first studio in March. I'm not able to share like more specifics than that.
That's fine.
We're really excited. It's been something that we've worked on and been building for, you know, I would say like 2 years now. And it feels really good that it's like feels real. And it's also been lovely that we've gotten quite a bit of interest and have been talking to a number of studios for a while. And so I'm really, really excited for it to launch and get started and to see where it goes.
Hey, hope you're enjoying the show. If you are, please go to patreon.com/gamedevadvice. We'd love to see if you can support the show and help new episodes keep coming out. That's patreon.com/gamedevadvice. Thanks.
And I'm going to throw something out here we hadn't necessarily talked about, but just see what your thoughts are. Kind of like what was kind of the catalyst for you to get into this work, and what of your story are you comfortable sharing with to kind of talk about all these great things that you're working on? Because I think they're fantastic. But what kind of drove you to that, and what kind of is your catalyst?
Me personally, or like the organization?
Whatever you're comfortable sharing. It could be the organization if you want to keep it a little bit more.
I think I can answer a little bit of both. for the organization, we, you know, this definitely has been a seed that was planted even when we started when we launched the games hotline. Mm-hmm. We definitely had this vision of like, we know that this is like a larger problem and that it's going to need like a multi-pronged approach. Mm-hmm. And so what we did was we did a lot of like looking around at like what folks were already doing, what work was already out there, and where can we contribute the most to be effective. And so we started with the games hotline because we felt like there wasn't a place where someone could go like right now to get support if they were dealing with sexual violence or mental health crises or anything else. And especially a place that would understand games and kind of the particular flavor of harassment and abuse and such that shows up in games. Mm-hmm. So we decided to kind of cultivate the hotline first, right? So in 2020, we started that. And at the same time, we also knew that, you know, this wasn't going to be the end game. And we also needed to look at kind of systemic approaches. Mm-hmm. And so since then, we've also been like, you know, behind the scenes, also working on and cultivating what, you know, is now the Culture Shift Project and really looking at, how to address those systemic things. For me personally, my story has a lot of kind of winding ins and outs.
Okay.
Ages and ages ago, or not truly that long ago, but back when I was in college, I was really involved in collegiate esports. It was deep in that community. Yeah. Here in Austin, doing a lot of really exciting work. This was around, you know, 2011, 2012, which was also when, you know, esports was really kind of blossoming in North America. So it was an exciting time to be in the space. I was doing a lot of like tournament, like organizing and stuff like that. I ended up having to leave the space, being pushed out because of my own kind of dealings just because of gender-based violence that happened to me. You know, I was sexually assaulted a couple of times, and just like dealing with the general atmosphere just really never feeling welcomed or safe. This is why I like that iceberg metaphor so much, because more than anything, I remember the atmosphere more than the more escalated incidents that happened. It really was, I was so excited to be in esports.
Yeah.
I just kind of saw it all as a cost of entry, that this is the price for me to be here. And I am willing to accept that because I love games so much, you know? And so when I did eventually get pushed out and had to leave, it really felt like a dream shattered for me. I really thought at that time, I truly believed that I would be in games and in esports for the rest of my life. Like that's the career path I saw. It's what I wanted more than anything.
Right.
Leaving that, I ended up, I don't know, just kind of seemingly going a whole bunch of different directions. I, you know, would like stream with my friends like now and then because I still loved games, but I was also like volunteering for a suicide hotline. And then I was also working in local kind of queer community work here, doing like health and wellness work and really helping to address like health equity in Austin for queer people of color. That was really incredibly fulfilling work and really exciting. But it does kind of feel very winding, right? But then someone reached out to me and was like, hey, I'm working on starting a hotline for the games industry that is going to be survivor-centered and about, you know, and kind of about gender-based harm and mental health. And I was like, wait. This is everything, like every choice that I've made in my life.
Right.
Like kind of has led to this. So Yeah, I don't know. It was really perfect. I had the like kind of experience and know-how that was needed around gender-based violence, because I had done a lot of like sexual assault prevention work in the community. Mm-hmm. I knew about hotlines because I'd volunteered for a hotline for a long time by then. And I knew games. I loved games. This was like, right. I don't know, just something I could never shake. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know. I like telling that story just because I feel like there are so many narratives of like, if you want to get your like dream job or whatever, like yeah. you need to have like a direct path, you know, like everything you need to do has to like be towards that. And that hasn't been true for me. And I really,
Hollywood. That's not the real world. Right?
I know. Right. Yeah. So anyways, thanks for listening to my story.
No. And, that's great. Right. In the sense that all those experiences put you in the perfect position for this role, right? Because like people mm-hmm. think that they map out this strategy and they think it's a straight line to something they're mm-hmm. going to do. And, you know, along the way in their journey of life, right? Like shit happens and like, what is going on? And this, I'm totally going to have to change my direction and all this stuff. But then later it kind of reveals, okay, this maybe is now meant to be here, this doing this thing in this way. So, no, thank mm-hmm. you for sharing that. And
And I think kind of to tie it back to like games industry stuff, like I think these types of like winding paths, I think it's important for us to really like acknowledge that there are multiple ways of, mm-hmm. of knowing how to do something or of getting the experience you need to do something, and that it might not always be linear, especially when there are incidences of trauma or violence involved for folks, you know, like my story is my story, but there are actually a million stories very mm-hmm. similar of right. folks who love games and, you know, thought it would be their dream and their whole life and then get pushed out. And some find their way back, some find a way to stay, some never return. And mm-hmm. I think with the prevalence of gender-based harm and kind of discrimination and all of that in the industry, I think that's also just like something for us to think about, even in things that don't feel related to gender-based harm. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it is really like a full complete picture, you know, around hiring or networking mm-hmm. or anything like that. So,
And two follow-up things while I'm thinking of it is, you're right too about the game industry being kind of unique. And, you know, whether it's in development or especially, you know, to like esports, right? Like mm-hmm. If you talk to people that don't understand the culture and the gaming culture, they may look at you like you have three heads, right? Because they don't understand, like, what do you mean? Like people do this or that, because it's just mm-hmm. its own kind of community. And without having that context and understanding that, people may not be able to provide help or understand how to help people in that situation, right? Because there's all this nomenclature and all this kind of culture around gaming that it would seem foreign to say somebody who has no exposure to the game industry or gaming online, or, you know, mm-hmm. you just think about all that terrible crap that goes on when you're playing games online with strangers, you know, and it's just like, I can just imagine. Yeah.
And again, it's not about the extreme stuff. It's about the stuff that is so normal. Mm-hmm. Like it is wild how normal like certain phrases are in games. Yeah. Right. And if you tell someone who doesn't play games, they're like kind of not able to believe you, because they're like, why would that be okay? Why would you be in a place that's doing that all of the time? But to us, it's like really normal, you know, same with like industry stuff, industry parties, like, especially with like how much alcohol is really normal at a lot of mm-hmm. industry parties and industry workplaces. I think I've heard, you know, survivors tell their story around that, and people, you know, even people who want to like, you know, be supportive, just not really being able to fully like believe you because it feels so outlandish to them.
Right.
And that feels so bad. That feels so bad to be telling your story and people not getting it or seeing it.
Yeah. And thinking you're, you know, exaggerating or.
Right.
Or,
exactly.
You know, like that's mm-hmm. possible, but yeah. And alcohol tends to amplify things. So if there's something that's kind of persistent in an environment mm-hmm. and then you throw the alcohol on, it's just like a magnifier.
Lowers all those inhibitions.
Yeah. And then people escalate their, their sometimes bad or, you know, shit, evil, mm-hmm. evil behavior. Right. So, and just to help the audience, who may not be familiar with it, like, you know, what is your definition of how you view gender-based harm. Like, you kind of talk through some examples and just kind of give people a framework so they're more cognizant of it and they kind of know what that means.
Yeah. So I would say gender-based harm is any unwanted sexual or gender-based behavior that intimidates or threatens, annoys a person, or just puts them in fear of their safety. And so this is a pretty broad definition, because really, like, the picture of it is again, like the iceberg. It's so much more than just specific actions. Yeah. And what I like about this definition is that, one, you know, the element of, like, it being sexual or gender-based behavior, I feel like makes room for and acknowledges acts that are maybe more about objectification or make someone feel dehumanized in the way that they're treated because of their gender, but don't necessarily involve, like, a sexual act, right? So an example that I give is, you know, we've heard of incidences where in a workplace, there might be kind of a group chat among just male colleagues where they might describe outfits that certain female colleagues are wearing that day, kind of with the implication that the other guys should go check them out. And so, you know, this might not necessarily ever involve, like, any inappropriate actions or kind of even any like physical contact with the female colleagues or other colleagues, whoever it is. Yep. But it definitely is, like, treating some people a certain way because of their gender. And it is, like, really inappropriate and kind of demeaning behavior. Right.
Yeah.
So I kind of include that in the iceberg. And then also this definition kind of emphasizes that it's also more about the impact rather than the intention, right? It's not about behavior that someone sets out to cause harm with or, like, do a gender violence, but actually it's about how it's, you know, behavior that annoys someone or threatens someone or just makes them feel unsafe. It's about the person and how they feel on the other side.
Right. And having empathy to understand what it feel like having the shoe on the other foot, right? Like, so that they realize, like, oh yeah, that's pretty terrible. If I was in that situation, I shouldn't have said that. Right.
A lot of times the reality is that a lot of gender-based violence happens without bad intention. I think we'd like to have
they don't think of the consequences, right? Like, they just say it, but then they don't think, like, well, how does that make the other person feel? And what would you feel like if you were in that situation? Because they don't think that through. They're just off the cuff and they just say that kind of stuff without thinking, and because they're programmed in ways. Or
a lot of this is not always also targeted at a certain person. A lot of this harmful kind of environment can just happen in the workplace, not even about anyone, you know, using, like, really demeaning language or just saying, like, a really problematic or sexist joke. You know, it could be about the game. It could be about the work. But I don't know, it automatically kind of creates a situation where some people feel like they aren't safe or they're not welcome here.
Right. And then those compound, you know, day after day, month after month, can drive people just to leave, right? Like, which they shouldn't. Like, people shouldn't feel threatened or forced out, right? That's just not right.
Yeah.
So, changing directions, you talked about games and esports. Like, what kind of games are you playing now, or what are you excited about?
Every time someone asks me this question, every game I've ever played flies out of my brain. I play a lot of indie games for the most part. I don't know if you remember back in 2020 when the big, like, Black Lives Matter stuff was happening, there was a giant, like, itch.io for racial justice bundle with, like, a bajillion games in it that I think a bunch of people brought. They raised a bunch of money for Black Lives Matter and I think a bail project, which is really awesome and really cool. But it just kind of sat in a pile. And my current project is working through that whole backlog and playing all the games I want to play in that bundle. And there's a lot of gems in there. Huh. I recently played Signs of the Sojourner, which is kind of like a card puzzle-y conversational game. I don't know, but it's really brilliant. It like, it meshes the mechanic of the game, which is like a kind of a puzzle card game. You have to like match, you have to predict what the other player's hand is, and you have to try to get matches.
Okay.
So that's, you know, it's a very simple mechanic, but then it's built in with, I don't know, just like the conversational pieces and the story of the game, which I feel like a lot of games try to do and none have done as seamlessly and successfully as this one. It really is. So it's so cool. And even your deck, it's a kind of a deck building game. Mm-hmm. Every conversation you have to, at the end of the conversation, you take a card from the other person's deck and you replace a card in your own. And so it's just this beautiful feeling of like that you are impacted by every interaction you have.
Mm-hmm.
And the more you speak to someone with a triangle shape, the more triangle shaped cards you'll have.
Yeah,
and then like when you go somewhere else and you need to speak to someone with a circle shape, you know, have you spoken to anyone with a circle shape before and how can you relate to them? And then coming back home, you know, maybe you've diversified your hand so much that's actually now really hard to relate to and talk to the people at home who are still kind of that, or those original kind of triangle shapes. And I just thought that was so, so cool.
Hmm.
Yeah. How about you? What games have you been playing?
You know, I, just for the simplicity, like Alto's Odyssey, I just kind of play that, at night before I'm getting ready to crash or something like that. And just the art direction is beautiful and it just has kind of soothing music and you can kind of play it with objectives and try to keep progressing. Or there's just kind of like free play mode. You're just kind of seeing how long you can ski, you know, before you crash. So, it's part of the Apple Arcade and, I don't really play a lot of games, which is embarrassing.
Wow.
But
this game looks so beautiful.
Yeah. You just looked it up. Yeah.
Yeah.
And when you play it with, you know, earbuds or headphones on, and there's like lightning sound effects and then there's like music, the time will change. So there'll be like daytime and nighttime.
It's I love that.
Super simple mechanic. You're just tapping the screen and doing flips or jumps and then trying to do things. But it's just like chill way to spend 10, 15, 20 minutes playing a game.
Yeah, I love mobile games, so I'll definitely need to check this out.
So where can people find you online? Like website, Twitter, stuff like that. And part two, like how can people get involved if they want to help?
You can find the Games Hotline at gameshotline.org. And you can read more about us, our work, and some resources we have there.
Okay.
And there's also a contact form there. So if you're interested in maybe like volunteering or just getting more involved, reaching out there is the best way to do that.
Right.
Another thing that's really helpful for us, especially since we're still a relatively new hotline, is really just getting the word out.
Yeah.
Telling your friends, if you have a community group that has like a resources list, adding us, or if there's any time, like, you know, something in the news or something that happened in your community or at your workplace that, you know, is affecting a lot of folks, just keeping us in mind and sharing that, like, hey, I know a lot is going on, or this big news thing is like affecting folks a lot.
Right.
Here's this resource that is literally for you. Please reach out. And so that's super helpful. You can find the Games Hotline on social media at Games Hotline, anywhere, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all that.
Right.
And then Feminist Frequency is at FemFreak. So at FemFreq. And that's where you can find more information about kind of the larger parent organization and the stuff that we're doing. We don't quite have a landing page yet for the Culture Shift Project.
Okay.
But we'll, if you follow FemFreak, that's where we'll be like posting more about it when that is ready.
Yeah.
That's
on YouTube also, right? Like I see YouTube, Instagram, YouTube, Facebook,
Instagram, Twitter, all of that. Feminist Frequency has a lot of content too. If you are interested in media and representations of women, people of color, queer folks in games and such like that. Mm-hmm. And then I also, because the Culture Shift Project is a partnership with Take This, I kind of want to plug Take This, even though I'm not a representative of them. No. You can find them at Take This online or at their website, takethis.org. They do phenomenal work around mental health in games. And then finally, just to say again, if you ever want to get connected to the Games Hotline, you just text the word support to 23368 from anywhere in the US, text in anytime, and here to talk.
That's wonderful. Those resources are there, and especially text too, because that's such a, feels more immediate than like sending an email and it falls off and who knows if anyone reads it and all that kind of stuff. Last question. What's one piece of advice you give others right now?
I think I want to say to just encourage everyone to practice accountability in all of the smallest ways. Because it really shows up in every part of our life. And accountability, it's a muscle. And if we want to one day be able to really address the like most intense crises and the most escalated harms that happen with accountability, we need to first be able to address even everyday misunderstandings and everyday conflicts between all the people in our lives. So, you know, if you tell a friend you're going to do something and you don't, or you say you're going to send the agenda before a meeting at work, but you don't, or if something comes off the wrong way and it really, you can tell it hurt your friend or your friend brings it up to you.
Yeah.
Just really, you know, notice how you feel when that happens. Acknowledge that it wasn't, that that's not how you wish it had happened and that it wasn't okay. And make an apology, see what you can do to make it right. And work on yourself to see how you can do that less in the future. It really is. It gets easier the more you try it. And I really want accountability one day to be something that's not scary, but actually something that is exciting and that we all want to engage in.
Yeah, it's about self-reflection and self-development, right? And
and it's about all of us. It's not it's not an us versus them. There's not a secret cohort of bad apples.
Right.
It's really about us. It's about me. It's about you. We have to work on it together.
Yeah. It's been a great discussion, and thank you for your work, and thank you for being on the show tonight.
Yeah, this was really lovely. Thank you for having me here.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Game Dev Advice, the Game Developers Podcast. Go to the website at gamedevadvice.com, and you can find the show notes along with show notes for all the other episodes. Please also check out the new Patreon page at patreon.com/gamedevadvice. Have a lot of options up there for how you can support the show. Again, that's patreon.com/gamedevadvice. Thanks again for listening and being part of the show. Take care. Bye-bye.